From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, a special Earth Changes program for you with Michael Sandena and geologist Jim Berkland. Well, brace yourselves. Residents along the Texas-Mexico border kept a watchful eye on Tropical Storm Dolly, stocking up on plywood, generators, flashlights, as forecasters predicting the storm could strengthen into a hurricane later this week and make landfall. The storm was expected to bring high winds and dump 10 to 20 inches of rain in coastal areas near the U.S.-Mexican border. Emergency officials feared major flooding problems and urged coastal residents to prepare. Be careful if you live in that area. An Austrian man is demanding substantial damages after he apparently was blasted off the toilet when huge hailstones started shooting out of it. Martin Bierbauer says, listen, I heard pipes rumbling a bit, and suddenly hailstorms the size of golf balls started exploding out of the toilet like it was a popcorn machine. There was an avalanche of ice that quickly filled the toilet, then the entire flat, and eventually the entire building. A nearby resident agrees. They said, look, we grabbed boards, put it over the toilet, but the pressure was so great, it blew up. Something's going on out there. A New Jersey man trying to exterminate insects in his apartment blew it up instead. He was unhurt in the incident, but 80% of his apartment gone. The accident occurred as he was spraying for pests in his kitchen. Somehow the bug spray ignited a blast that blew out the apartment's front windows and triggered a fire that spread quickly. And just giving you some news that you can use. A former driver of Osama bin Laden has pleaded not guilty at the first war crimes trial to be held in the U.S. prison in Guantanamo Bay. A Yemeni national, Salim Hamdan, he's 37 years old, is accused of conspiracy and supporting terrorism and faces life in prison if he's convicted. About 270 suspects remain in detention in Guantanamo Bay. The United Arab Emirates, which sits on one-tenth of the world's oil reserves, is likely now to be the first Middle Eastern country to have a nuclear energy program. Abu Dhabi, the UAE's capital, has already appointed an ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency even before it has built a nuclear facility. The United Arab Emirates lies in the region that some say could be on a course for a nuclear arms buildup. The Emirates is across the Persian Gulf from Iran, which, of course, you know, is currently under investigation by the International Atomic Energy Agency for its suspected uranium enrichment program. The UAE looks to set up a different path if it goes ahead with its nuclear program. It apparently is committed to a full transparency and plans to import its nuclear fuel, which would be a barrier then to building nuclear weapons. In Estonia, authorities say a skydiver was killed when she walked into a spinning aircraft propeller at an airfield there. The incident happened as a group of skydivers were boarding the turboprop plane in the western town of Rapla. Photographs that depict Italian sunbathers relaxing at the beach despite the nearby presence of the bodies of two girls who had drowned. The incident took place outside of Naples. Four teens reportedly began begging beachgoers for money. Then they decided to go into the water despite not being able to swim. The girls were hit by an unusually large wave, resulting in an attempted rescue by lifesavers from a nearby beach. Now, two of the girls were saved. The other two, aged 14 and 16, could not be reached in time. Following their drowning, the bodies of the two girls were then dragged ashore, laid out under beach towels on beach. But Italian media later reported that the death of the girls and the presence of their bodies did not stop the sunbathers from enjoying their day at the beach, as most continued with their activities. My gosh. Scientists are hailing a new drug to treat aggressive prostate cancer as potentially the most significant advance in the field for 70 years. It's called abiraterone, and it could potentially treat up to 80% of the patients with a deadly form of that disease resistant to current available chemotherapy. The drug works by apparently blocking the hormones which fuel the cancer. The Institute of Cancer Research hopes a simple pill form will be available in 2 or 3 years. In the latest disappointment over the cholesterol pill Vytorin, a major European study in patients with heart valve disease finds that the drug did not prevent worsening of the disease or lower the need for valve surgery. Its makers, their shares plunged 15%, Merck and Schering Plough. They say that Vytorin has no better than a placebo at lowering the risk of major cardiovascular events. The Batman film, The Dark Knight, has set a box office record for best opening weekend ever at the U.S. box office. The sequel took in $155.3 million in North America, beating the record set last year by Spider-Man 3, which took in $151.1 million. Critics have praised the film, which stars Christian Bale as Batman and the late actor Heath Ledger, who plays the Joker. I was at the Psychotronics Conference in Chicago this weekend, had a wonderful time. Couple speeches, we had a meet and greet on Sunday, and let me tell you something, these people there are in tune to what's going on this planet. They just had a marvelous time. But after the event was done, hours later, Dear Tommy said he was hungry, so across the street from the hotel was a fast food restaurant which said 24/7 on it. It was pouring in Chicago. I mean, cats and dogs. So I ventured across the street without an umbrella to go take care of my producer. And I get to the door, I knock, and it's locked, but it still has 24/7 on the window. And they meant the drive-through. So I walked around to the drive-through. And I knocked on the window, and the guy came to the window and says, yes. And I said, well, I want to order this and that. And he said, well, we can't serve you. And I said, why not? He says, you're not in a car. I said, what do you mean I'm not in a car? And he said, we can only serve you in a drive-through if you're in a car. So I walked across the street, still pouring rain, go back into the hotel, and the security guard said, what's wrong? I thought you were going to go out and get something to eat. And I said, and I explained what happened. This guy gave me his car keys and said, here, you take my car. I mean, he didn't know me. And so I went in, drove around, ordered, came back, gave him a great tip. And that tells you there's some great people living on this planet. For those of you who think that we aren't in the midst of a planet with good folks. And then on the way to the airport early this morning to get here in time, the cab driver had Coast to Coast on, and he was listening to our interview with Glynis McCants, and he said, this is a great show. You've got to listen to it. So I kind of quietly sat back listening to him, and he says, yeah, you won't believe it. Everybody I pick up in this cab, I ask them if they're a cross between an extraterrestrial and a human. He says, because I know there are some of them, and they're out there. And he said, just last week, I picked up a student from Washington University, which, by the way, is a great university in St. Louis. And he said, I think he was one of those hybrids, but he might have been drunk. Unbelievable. Well, in a moment, someone who takes this field very seriously, Bud Hopkins, joins us as we talk about alien abductions. Bud is going to be in San Jose this weekend at the 39th Annual International UFO Symposium. And we'll be back with Bud in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Bud Hopkins is a world-renowned author and UFO abduction researcher. He's investigated hundreds of cases and continues to lead investigations into the controversial systematic abduction of human beings by UFO occupants. Here he is with us now. Hey, Bud, how are you?
You're very good. Very glad to be with you again.
Always a pleasure. You know, I was joking with the cabbie today in St. Louis as he was driving me to the airport about his thoughts of ETs and hybrids. But I got to tell you, after he was done talking, he was beginning to convince me, Bud, that there could be something very serious going on. As much as he was, you know, having fun with all this, you have devoted your career to this over the last few years. Are you seeing a trend at all with any of these cases?
Well, the thing that your cab driver was talking about the idea of hybrid beings who seem to be possibly existing along with us on this planet for whatever purpose, There have been a lot of reports, and the problem with the whole subject is that when you get many, many reports that are extremely similarly detailed, even though they sound totally off the wall, you have to pay attention. And we've been paying attention, and David Jacobs and I think probably more than most other people in the field, have been looking into those cases. David actually more intensely than I have. But I'm afraid that there might be something very much to that. The point is that we have to know that there is a purpose behind the whole UFO phenomenon. Why are they here? What is this about? And the idea that they're just looking at us or whatever just never seemed to make much sense. And it wasn't really until the early 80s when I ran into several cases in a row that I began to make my investigations take a slightly different direction, and we found that they were attempting to create these hybrid beings.
Do we know, though, Bud, if this creation of these hybrid beings is being done to better our planet, to better society? Maybe they know about some Earth changes that might require humans to be changed a little bit, or are they trying to take things over?
We have absolutely no idea. That cannot be answered. We simply don't know. And this has been an aspect of the phenomenon all along. The biggest question, which is what do they intend for us and our planet, has never been answered in any way that we could take any sense of comfort or actually believe what people say they have been told upon occasion about this. There's absolutely no doubt, without any doubt, that to all of the abduction reports that we've looked at, there is a strand of deliberate deception on the part of the alien beings. It's the idea of using screen memories, of telling people everything will be fine, you won't be hurt. Sometimes they are hurt. The sense that they've never told such things as what is the place of origin of the UFO occupants, or what is the ultimate, final goal which we have for being here. But those things we don't know. We know a huge amount about the techniques they use along the way in their program. It simply has to be called a kind of specific program, but we don't know what that end result, the intentions are.
But at what point, when you were doing this, did you get convinced that there's something else going on here, that there's something very unusual going on here? The first couple cases, what happened?
Well, what do you mean by something going on? The fact that there are things flying around in the air that
your belief in, let's say, the abduction phenomenon and also the visitations.
The abduction phenomenon, the very first cases that I got into in the 60s, in the 70s, seemed to be pretty ironclad cases. And because of the replication, case after case after case, the same details, the same post-traumatic stress that the abductees were suffering from, the physical marks on their bodies, the marks on the ground when the UFOs landed, the reports of a few cases of external witnesses who saw the abduction take place, although those are very, very rare. I mean, all of that just simply piled up in such a way that I no longer, as I have put it many times before, I realized with sadness that I no longer had the luxury of disbelief. It was just too much.
But you're going to be in San Jose this weekend for the 39th Annual International UFO Symposium put on by MUFON. I'm going to be out there, too. George Knapp will be there, too, talking about the Skinwalker Ranch. How important is MUFON to these investigations these days?
Well, that's hard to say. I mean, it depends on which branch of MUFON is. Seth Roll, as you know, an enormous organization with membership, which goes from people who are, let's say, at the low end of rather naive or credulous and not very well trained, up to people who are extremely expert at what they do, and of course everything in between. So depends on what branch. What particular people you're talking about, but it is a very important grassroots organization because it does sort of operate as a kind of a funnel to bring local events that have not made the papers and so forth up through channels so that we hear about these things more often. Now it's a very interesting thing about the way the field shifts in terms of its emphasis. Mm-hmm. We've had, you know, when you think of the different aspects of UFO investigations, I mean, Roswell was a huge thing at one point, not so much now, in terms of just how many people were paying attention to it and talking about it. Certainly the abduction phenomenon, particularly in the 80s, was enormously central. And that, of course, had to do with the fact that three books came out simultaneously, My Intruders and Strieber's Communion and Gary Kinder's Light Years, all came out at once with major publishers, which meant that the cumulative effect was that there was an enormous amount of publicity for the subject. But I would say right now the area of greatest kind of publicity and public interest is that of government secrecy. And this has very much to do with the fact of the press conference that was done in November of 2007 by Leslie Kane and James Fox. Of course, that is more or less the theme of the conference that is going to be held in San Jose. But it doesn't mean that any of the other areas of interest disappear. They just somehow become eclipsed temporarily by a new interest.
When I was at the conference this weekend in Chicago, Bud, someone asked me if I believed the government would give us full disclosure soon, and my answer, based on just my instincts here, was no, it's not going to come from the government that way.
I totally agree with you. There is a kind of fantasy among some people who are just convinced by every little thing, and this has been going on for decades, that the government is just about to make the whole thing public. And as you probably remember, there was the whole brouhaha about Hillary Clinton was going to, she was president, she was going to announce it.
And
Governor Richardson, if he was president, was going to announce it, so forth. None of that has any basis whatsoever in any kind of reality.
See, I'm not sure that even if a favorable president to the UFO field got elected, I'm not sure he or she would be told what's going on.
Yeah, I agree with you there, too. I simply think that, after all, the organization or whatever the bureau is that's handling this, that organization or bureau has dug itself such an enormous hole ever since the 1940s that it just becomes harder and harder and harder for it to be completely reversed with an announcement that, oh, yeah, we've been lying to you for 40 years or 50 years or 60 years or something like that. I don't know what president, also, as I've said many, many times before, what president is going to get up there and say, ladies and gentlemen, they're here, they can now fly anything we have.
There's nothing we can, they're abducting us, and there's nothing we can do about it.
There's nothing we can do about it. I mean, who's going to do that? And I felt, as a matter of fact, historically, that if Richard Nixon had been told about this if he knew about the reality of the UFO phenomenon, then undoubtedly he would have made it public, because at that point the impeachment and Watergate and everything would have disappeared.
Well, that's true. I want to ask you about the Jackie Gleason story, Bud, we always hear so much about, and we'll also talk about more abduction cases, and we'll open up the phone lines. We've got Bud Hopkins for just this hour. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM. Now, I got out of the 100-degree weather in St. Louis, and with the heat index, it must have been about 120. My gosh. Why, they've got thunderstorms right now, too. Next hour, Earth Changes. We're going to have a special series of guests for you throughout the evening. You're going to love the program. We'll be right back. We'll take your phone calls as we continue with our chat with Bud Hopkins, I think the world's foremost renowned expert now in the UFO abduction research area. And we're with Bud Hopkins. Bud, with everything that you have investigated over the years, is there still that one case that stands out in your mind?
Oh, well, there's so many cases to do. I still think the Linda Cortilla case that I wrote about and witnessed is, because of its absolute complexity and the major people involved in it and so forth, it certainly does stand out. But there are so many other cases that have also been sort of landmark cases in letting us see what the basic patterns were to the whole abduction phenomenon. And, you know, you asked me about, when I first accepted the idea that these things were real. One of the basic points that people don't really understand is that in all of these investigations, there was nothing disconfirming. In other words, nothing came along that said these things didn't happen. There was no evidence, no theory, no anything except evidence that would support the reality of the well-investigated cases. So we were stuck with it. I mean, nobody really wanted these things to be true. They're pretty disturbing.
I'm just so glad, Bud, we've got you out there and people like David Jacobs and Stanton Friedman. And, I'm not going to call you guys the old guys of ufology.
Well, I'm the oldest of the old guys, I think.
Yeah, but are there any younger people coming up, too, to keep things going?
Definitely younger people coming up. That's one of the great things. And, I mean, just as a matter of fact, in terms of the government secrecy issue, I mean, the incredible energy of Leslie Kane and James
Fox.
Fox is really, it's quite amazing in what they've been able to accomplish. So, but there are many people coming along. It's very gratifying. You know, one little point I would like to make is a side issue, but the subject of remote viewing was brought up, and I've always thought that if there was something really behind remote viewing, we would have had Osama bin Laden in prison a long time ago, and it wouldn't have taken millions of dollars to pay somebody to rat on Saddam Hussein either.
Yeah.
Nobody could find them, and that would have been the greatest coup possible for the Bush administration if they had actually got bin Laden. So you have to assume that it's not an exact science, let's put it that way.
No, we've got some remote viewers who claim that they helped find Saddam, but nobody has found bin Laden, that's for sure. Let's take some calls, Bud, okay?
Okay.
First-time caller, let's go to you in Connecticut. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi, how are you?
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
My name is Lamar.
Okay, sir.
Hey, nice to talk to you, George.
Thank you.
I'm calling to actually ask Bud a question.
Okay, he's there for you.
I'm that type of conspiracy theory guy. I have so many questions, but I know time restraints won't allow them. But my question is, I don't know if you may or may not have contacts within, you know, NASA or anything like that, but if there's space debris or junk flying around in the air, why is it that every picture released is just so perfect?
I don't know. Can you answer that, Bud?
What pictures are so perfect?
I guess everything from space that we see.
Everything from space. Well, I mean, first of all, I'm not an expert in NASA's internal affairs, I can tell you that. So I'm not perhaps the right one to ask that. But the thing is that, of course, we don't know exactly everything that has been recorded by NASA. You may be familiar with the fact that a lawsuit that actually Leslie Kane brought against NASA was decided in her favor, and they have been having to produce a large number of documents, although so far no smoking gun, having to do with the crash of some objects in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. So at least maybe we're getting some kind of push into the NASA archives. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it very much.
Eric in California, your turn with Bud Hopkins. Hi, Eric.
Hi, George and Bud. How are you guys doing?
Good.
I have a different theory I would like to propound.
All right.
And I don't personally believe in aliens and flying saucers, but I do believe in extraterrestrials. And to explain it, what I believe in is that they are not a physical extraterrestrial, but they're a spiritual one. What do you think about that?
Spiritual or dimensional?
Not dimensional, because dimensional would just be another form of matter. I'm talking about something entirely different.
Okay. Well, but there are some people who would agree with him.
Well, yeah, there are some people who would agree with virtually every theory that has ever been propounded about this subject. But the physicality of the abduction phenomenon is very, very clear. When the craft land, they have broken off tree branches as they have come down. They mark the ground and affect the soil. And when they take people aboard the craft, they very often excise some flesh, leaving little scoop marks, little scars. It's a very, very physical thing to the people who are taken, and they might be put back afterwards in the wrong bed or in the wrong room of the house with their clothes on backwards and so forth. There's nothing very spiritual about any of that. So I'm not trying to say spiritual matter doesn't exist or angels or whatever anybody wants to say exists, but the abduction phenomenon is a very, very physical thing. But I thank you for presenting your theory. Thank you.
Still can't get you to tell us who that UN honcho was during the Brooklyn Bridge UFO case, huh?
It's possible for me to out somebody and then expect anybody in the future to come to me and be assured of confidentiality.
So true, so true. If this person one day, assuming he's or she is still alive, said to you, "Bud, I don't care. Go ahead, use my name." Would you?
Oh, sure. If I got permission.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
In a second.
Let's go next to Sharon in North Carolina, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Sharon.
Thank you, George.
Sure thing.
Bud. Bud, about 7 years ago, I was in the mall. I used to work there, Greensboro Mall. And there was this perfect-looking black man that...
he's running for president right now.
Well, anyways, that always came through the store where I worked, but he never said anything. And so one time I really concentrated on him kind of mentally. And as I was looking at him, he was coming towards me. His eyes went into the slitted cat's eyes just briefly. And I'm not, I don't drink and, you know, and but that's what happened.
So you think Sharon was a reptilian?
Well, I don't know. I'm asking Bud because.
Well, I don't know if Bud knows.
If I had been there, I might have had an opinion. There isn't really much I could say about what you're describing. It sounds like you had an interesting experience, and I guess that's where it'll probably sit. There isn't much we can do or imagine about it. But thank you very much for presenting it.
But in your cases, how many different races of extraterrestrials have you heard about?
Well, see, essentially, you have the grays, the basic standard figures that are described again and again, and you have these tall insectoid,
the praying mantis legs,
and then you have although many fewer, but you have the more reptilian scaled things, and of course you have all kinds of some in between beings that seem to have human and alien characteristics. But the basic problem here is that they all seem to be in the same craft doing the same thing together. So we don't have a sense that we have a racial type doing one thing and another racial type or whatever species, whatever you want to call them, doing something different. Essentially, it seems to me that there is basically one program at work here. And the various types, including the three I just mentioned, all seem to be cooperatively carrying it out.
Are you concerned at all about our safety because of some of the things you've heard?
When you say our safety, do you mean from George Norrie and Bud Hopkins?
No, just the general population based on E.T.
Well,
visitations.
I certainly am concerned. I have a new granddaughter, and I know that the world that she's going to grow up in is going to be entirely different than the world I grew up in, and that's not just because, I think, of the global climate change, which is happening to us so fast. So I don't look at the future of my granddaughter as being the happy-go-lucky, relatively speaking, or her childhood that I had. So I am concerned that this is the basic thing, George. We have been seeing UFOs for a long, long time. They've been reported in great detail in the 20th century, long before 1947. And in other words, they've been seen during World War II and so forth, the Foo Fighters. But yet there's no record that any extraterrestrial anything, save even one Jewish baby from Auschwitz. No one was ever saved at Hiroshima by a bombing that was prevented or anything. There's no sign that there was ever any kind of benign or helpful intervention in our history. So we can't look to the UFO phenomenon as being something that seems to have our best interests at heart. And that leaves you with the idea that maybe it's very much a different kind of thing. We don't really know. But it would be wonderful if there had been signs in the past, dramatic signs of alien aid that we have received. For instance, AIDS was not a major disease a long time ago, but it certainly has decimated, especially Africa at this point. There's no sign that the aliens, who seem to have all kinds of technological abilities, have done anything to help anybody. That's the problem. And even though there's no sign that they're doing anything that seems to be deliberately harmful, there's nothing sadistic about their behavior, we don't see the absence of seeing anything that looks helpful is a very ominous sign to me.
Bud in Illinois, you're on with Bud. Go ahead, Bud.
Thanks, George, and thank you, Bud. Bud, my question, has anyone ever escaped during the kidnapping? Did they get away before actually being taken?
Well, that's an interesting question because there have been people. I don't want to, you know, depress anybody, but there are cases where people have felt that they have escaped, and or fought them off or something, and yet when you look further into the case, and especially if you use hypnotic regression and look into it in a much more detailed way, it turns out that it was an illusion, that they didn't really escape. I just think that the alien ability to paralyze and to control human behavior to some extent, and also to create all kinds of illusions in people's minds, probably means that at least no escape that I've heard of has been a genuine escape. That's a sad thing to have to report on, but.
But I have gotten to know through this program Travis Walton and Fire in the Sky fella, mm-hmm. and you know his story continues to be compelling to me.
Oh, first of all, he's an absolutely wonderful witness, and the thing is, he didn't really escape anything. I mean, he spent 5 days in captivity, and until he decided to dump him back on the highway. You know, he didn't escape, but...
He was one of the few they didn't want to keep, I guess, huh?
Well, what happened is, I think he, according to his recollections, he sort of came to on the table, and they were not expecting that to happen, and they hurried out of the room and left him free to wander around a little bit. Maybe that was deliberate. But at any rate, they had him for 5 days, and more or less, apparently, did what they wanted with him. So it's not an escape. As a matter of fact, it's a longer case of being captured than most cases we have.
Next up, let's go to Damien in California, first-time caller. You're on with Bud Hopkins. Damien, go ahead.
Hi, it's such a great honor to talk to you guys. Quickly, I wanted to describe a series of three dreams I had over about a year and a half. These were like kind of like film reels that were like projected into my mind, and I was watching the movie. The first one, I was driving in a car. It seemed really apocalyptic. And all of a sudden, this giant alien ship, it was like rectangular, a red laser shot out from the right side, and time stopped. Then I found myself outside of the car, and like all these weird shapes were like flying through the air. Then in the next part of the dream, I'm actually on the ground, and there are all these bodies, like a field of bodies, just like lying. I don't know if they're dead or alive. And I'm climbing to the top of the pub of these bodies, and I'm kind of reaching up to the sky saying, get me out, get me out of here. And then on the third part of the dream, I'm actually on the ship, and I am using part of my stomach tissue to culture a human-alien hybrid. And actually this alien comes out from the side and looks at me, and I'm like, speak freely. And it opens, takes off its mask, and it actually is one of these hybrids. And in the last part of the dream, I'm actually on the ground with a few other people. I'm like, I have something in my hand. I'm like, I say, should we calm down? And all these ships come zooming down. I'm on the ship. And the crew introduces itself to me. And the first row is like a row of these tall Nordic people in like black trench coats. The second race is insectoid. And the leader looks like an avocado with like the top heart hinged back and his head is popping out. So,
well, first of all, I mean, you certainly had yourself some wild dreams, let's put it that way. But the point is, as to whether these relate to real experiences in some way or other that you have later dreamed about in an altered form. The way we often, you know, have experiences in the real world and we dream about them at night, but they're very different. Whether or not it means you've had other experiences that you're perhaps not remembering is very, very hard to know just from what you're telling me. As a matter of fact, it's impossible to know. One of the things I'm going to do at the conference in San Jose is I'm going to give a workshop on the very ways that we have to to follow through an investigation to try to find out what was dream, what was reality, whether we're dealing with a probable abductee or not. All of these things are very complex, and over the years I've certainly developed a lot of different methods of going about that sort of investigation. That's what I'm going to be doing. The most typical kind of dream that turns out to be a UFO experience is when the person dreams that he or she wakes up in his bedroom or her bedroom, and the bedroom looks exactly in the dream the way it really looks.
That's very common. But I'm looking forward to seeing you this coming weekend. If you need some more information, just go to MUFON.com and look for the 39th Annual International UFO Symposium. There's also a link under my travel schedule at coasttocoastam.com. Bud Hopkins, we'll be back.